Heidi Holton, thanks for choosing this KAXE KBXE conversation. We are member-supported radio, a National Public Radio affiliate in northern Minnesota. We need your support for our radio broadcasts, our online content, and our podcast. Go to KAXE.org, and thanks for listening. The end of the 2019 Minnesota legislative session is supposed to be, right, Monday, May 20th. Reports from the Capitol, however, show lots of congestion and disagreement. I'm Heidi Holton with our DFL commentator, Colleen Nardone. And here to help us understand the end of session, it's MinnPost state politics reporter Peter Callahan. Peter, you're at the Capitol this morning, is that right?
Correct.
You are at it again. Thanks
for being
there. Have
you been there all night, or did you just start
in? No, I got to sleep.
Okay, good.
No.
Well, you know, last week on KAXE and KBXE, we had a chance to talk with both the Minnesota House Majority Leader, DFLer Ryan Winkler, and we talked also to the Senate Majority Leader, Republican Paul Gazelka. Of the two, Gazelka acted more optimistic about the budget this season. He even hoped that people on the boat on Saturday for opening fishing could hammer out a deal. Doesn't seem that way. It's still kind of at a stalemate, isn't it? Who's budging and who isn't, Peter?
Well, it's hard to say because they're doing what is probably the logical thing, which is to be negotiating without coming out every 45 minutes and slamming the other side, which is what they did last week and over the weekend. So they have decided to not do that. So when I have been up there, which I tend not to babysit the door as much as other reporters, they just smile and say, we're still talking or something like that. So we think that all the major issues are still on the table that have been there all along and that have been the sticking points. Medical provider tax, gasoline tax, tax increases in general, and then how much additional money they can put into K-12 education, and how do they take care of the health care budget if there is no extension of the provider tax.
Yeah, can you kind of explain that to us, the medical provider tax?
Oh, how much time do you have, Heidi? The provider tax is a 27-year-old tax that was a bipartisan tax to, at the time, pay for a basic health insurance plan for what we sometimes shorthand call the working poor, people who had too high income to qualify for Medicaid at the time, but did not have health insurance through their work. Over the years, the uses of that 2% provider tax, which is on almost every medical bill procedure that you have, whether it shows up on your bill or not, has moved to pay for expanded Obamacare Medicaid, for instance, and it also pays for the Republicans' reinsurance proposal from a couple of years ago. But it's a $700 million a year tax, and to get out of the 2011 government shutdown, then Governor Mark Dayton agreed to a Republican request to sunset that tax at the end of this year. So if no action, it goes away.
Right. But you've clarified, I think, I just want to repeat it. It's not a new tax. It would just be extending what is already built into the system.
I guess, but current law sunsets it. So it takes an affirmative vote of both the House and the Senate and the signature of the governor for that tax to be collected on January 1.
So the, you know, Republican cry of no new taxes, this could fit under it because it's not a new tax, is that right?
Well, they always say new taxes, but they also lump tax increases into their no new taxes.
Okay. Okay.
But I think for clarity's sake, because I'm a wordy and I like it to be precise, so I was just clarifying what Peter told us, that it is not new, it is just a renewal.
I see. Okay. So Peter, this may not be a fair question to ask you, but do you have any gut feeling about what's going to happen with the budget?
Well, you know, when there's no information, there's a lot of vacuum to fill. So there's speculation that perhaps the Republicans might agree to a year or two extension on the provider tax, just sort of give legislators more time to kind of figure out how to go forward from there. A provider tax at a lower rate because it has been accumulating a surplus in the last several biennia. I'm still somewhat skeptical of that, given how Senate Republicans have been speaking for the whole session. This could be the time of session where you search for pots of money. There are reserves, there are rainy day accounts. The collections from last month were very healthy, although you can't spend that money directly until it shows up in a forecast. You could do it in such a way where you would take money out of reserves and promise to backfill it with these revenues if they surface. So I think they're probably in the couch cushion part of budget negotiations, where they're trying to find various sources of money to increase school funding and to make sure that these healthcare programs retain their funding. I don't think there'll be a gas tax. And then they do have to do a tax bill because of federal tax law conformity, and there are many, 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 many ways to find money as you conform to the federal law. So my first guess is that's where they are.
We call this segment Making Sausage. I think I like the idea of calling it a couch cushion for the end of session conversations we have. Gosh, where they're looking for money.
Those don't mix very well, so don't go too far down that path.
No sausage,
Well, you
don't want to find a sausage in the couch cushion, Heidi. That's not good.
That's true.
It sounds that like you're more confident that there won't be a complete stalemate with a shutdown, that they'll repurpose money that's already there. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, confidence is probably an exaggeration. If they were to finish by Monday, I think that's what it would look like. If that is not acceptable to the governor and to the House DFL, then I do think you move into special session. Both sides are going to have to go back to their caucuses and say they gave in on some pretty important things. And I think you tend to want to do that pushing up against the deadline. And if it's the Monday deadline, that might be the one that you can say, I had to give in because we ran out of time. But it could also be July 1st, which is the start of the fiscal year, which is when a shutdown would occur. But it's worth noting, just not to alarm people very much, that the last government shutdown in 2011, 80% of state government continued to function.
We're talking with Peter Callahan from MinnPost. He covers the legislature for MinnPost, and we're trying to find out a little bit more about what's going on in the last few days. You know, everybody was pretty optimistic, including the governor, when he gave a state of the state about how Minnesota could be this role model for bipartisan sort of compromise. And it doesn't seem to be that way. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about this idea of bipartisanship that is floating around quite a bit in trying to pass some of the bills. You wrote an article on it recently.
Well, it's, you know, bipartisanship from either party means the other guys agree to what I want to do, and therefore it's bipartisan. And there was an assumption, I think, by the governor that the Senate Republicans were posturing, that they were setting up a negotiating position when they were saying no gas tax, no tax increase, no provider tax. He's finding out now whether that was in fact posturing or whether that is in fact catechism. And my sense was that it's more catechism. The way Paul Kozelka sees bipartisanship is saying, what can we get done that we both agree on? Which means we won't do a fetal heartbeat abortion bill. We won't do gun bills. We won't do a lot of the other pieces that are in DFL omnibus bills. We will get a two-year budget that's balanced. We will pass really now just a handful of things that they agree on. I mean, we're now struggling with the opioids response legislation, which from day one was an early win, and it now might not pass at all. HAVA, the election money, was an early win. That's still hanging fire. There's very few things that fit now into that bipartisanship. The hands-free cell phone requirement, regulation of pharmacy benefit managers, which is significant, perhaps an emergency insulin program that assigns fees on the insulin industry, and the desperately needed money and fixes to the MNLARS licensing insurance system. And that's about it.
Now, as I understand some of these things, let's go to the HAVA bill. That means we don't get...
Help America Vote Act.
Right.
Yeah.
That we won't get any of that money if we don't come to an agreement that accepts less money than the maximum provided. In other words, the Republican plan said, yeah, we can take some of that money, but we aren't going to take it all. And the Democrats, like me, want it all. So we're going to end up without any, right?
You know, my hunch is that that will all be appropriated before they break this session. Senator Kozelka gives his chairs a lot of leeway. And it's one way he maintains sort of the general support on the big issues. For instance, much smaller issue, but you're not going to get any changes to liquor law because the chairman of that committee doesn't want any changes to liquor law, even though if you brought them out on the floor, they might pass. Hava is another example of that, but every time we ask Kozelka about that, he answers the same way. That will be done before session ends. So I think he's going to let her run, Tiffmeyer, Senator Tiffmeyer, the chair, I think he's going to let her run on this for a while more. But in the end, I think you will find that in the state government omnibus bill.
Okay.
So you talked about this opioids bill. That was definitely one of those that seemed like it would pass because so many of the people are so connected to this issue, including lawmakers who have lost children to this. What happened? Why isn't this, what's the stalemate here?
Well, it's the chairs of this conference committee, Senator Rosen and Representative Olson, have been long supporters of this program. Olson got a penny a pill passed last year. I mean, I take it back. Rosen got a penny a pill passed last year through the Senate. She has been a backer of this all along. What they're arguing about is what the expected large settlements from Purdue Pharma and other manufacturers and distributors, how that money would affect these fees in the future. And it's, you know, if you looked at it, and, you know, I wrote about it, you would go, really? This is what you guys are arguing about? Whether or not the fees go away in 5 years or 10 years, whether the fees go away if I get $150 million in settlement or $700 million in settlement. But I don't know. It's a time here when people get their backs up, and I'm not sure those two chairs who have been working very closely with one another for the entire session, I'm not sure they're even speaking right now.
Well, it sounds like the only bipartisan things they're going to be able to agree on don't involve money, like philosophical things.
Right. Well, if opioids got through eventually, that is a fee increase of about $20 million a year. The other one is this emergency insulin language, which puts a new fee on insulin manufacturers, and it's not very much. It's $2 to $3 million a year. But again, it's a new fee that Republicans have adopted because of that particular crisis. And then this third thing, which seems very... bureaucratic pharmacy benefit managers are these middlemen, middle people companies between drug manufacturers and insurers and drug stores. Republicans look like they're going to agree to a significant new regulation of a private business, which doesn't fit into their normal agenda. So when you get something like this, like pharmacy prices, like opioids prices, like emergency insulin, where you know Alec Smith died because he was rationing his unaffordable insulin, they've been able to come together. I think they may still on opioids toward the end. Leadership has been sort of distracted on other issues, but I have a feeling they will make that happen at the end.
Colleen, I know last week when we talked to Representative Winkler, you talked about, he's a DFLer, that... about Minnesotans, the constituents, the voters, that they sort of wanted this bipartisan, this kind of hopefully moderate.
I think it's a long, long tradition. I was trying to remember when I first noticed this, And it was about the time, I'm not sure I was even old enough to vote. I remember hearing my dad complain because the governor and the lieutenant governor at that time were elected separately, and people liked to choose one from each party, and which he thought was counterintuitive, that you wouldn't get as much done. But I look at that as sort of the flagship to where we are now. If they have a Republican governor, they tend to want at least one branch of the legislature to be DFL and vice versa. And I don't think it's a coincidence that we are the only state that has a House of one party and a Senate of the other, because they always, it seems like they want some of the programs the DFL is promoting, like good education, good health care, da-da-da-da-da. But they're a little bit afraid to trust that if given their free rein, that they won't, you know, give away the store and spend too much money. So therefore, they have to have Republicans there to balance that. Does that make any sense to either of you? I don't mean doing it makes sense, but do you see that it's a long pattern of philosophically. And Minnesotans are nervous about being too partisan or too extreme about anything.
Peter, thoughts?
Well, I think that the last thing Glenn said is probably correct. But I also think that if Minnesota elected its Senate like other states do, which is half of the body is up for election every 2 years instead of this every 4 years, if half of the Minnesota Senate had been on the ballot last November, I think the Senate would be in DFL hands right now. They were lucky to have escaped this wave election in 2018, and they were just as lucky, or at least good timing, to have won their majority when Donald Trump did as well as he did. Didn't win the state, but he did very well outstate, and that helped Senate Republicans. So they like to say they somehow have a mandate from voters who wanted bipartisanship, but had half of them been on the ballot last November, they'd be in the minority.
Interesting. So, Peter, what as a Capitol reporter, what are the next, till Monday night, does it end at midnight on Monday, May 20th? What's life like for you as a Capitol reporter?
Oh, well, you know, MinnPost is less likely to be in a camp chair outside of doors because we don't need to do that sort of breaking story that they came out with a deal, even if you have no details, and sort of a Forum Newspapers, Star Tribune, Minnesota Public Radio beat. So I don't need to do that as much. I go up there and I check in and see how things are going, and I will want to be hearing when leaders and the governor come out, what they're having to say. The problem with this part of session is you're afraid to start working on some other aspect of issues that are still hanging fire, because at any moment a deal could come out and that story is either dead or so overwhelmed by other events. So we're at this really odd spot where you're trying to decide, I want to do something on that pharmacy benefit manager deal that the Conference Committee passed yesterday. But do I spend time on it, not have it quite finished yet when the deal comes out and the, you know, heading down that track at full speed? So we're in a weird spot, and I'd rather not be sitting outside doors. But you get to the point now where that's so dominant is how the session ends that you have to keep an eye on it.
That's Peter Callahan from MinnPost. You can read his work at MinnPost.com. Thanks so much, Peter. You helped clear some things up for us.
Okay, thanks, Heidi. Thanks.